Good afternoon. Today is Monday, January the 14th, 14th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is the Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Super Guy Gary Eagles.
Hey, happy new year, Brian. Glad to be with you today.
Isn't it? Geez, halfway through January.
Yes. Time flies. It's going to be a busy spring, too. And we got a little sunshine out there. It's all good.
Yeah, and some snow.
A good blend.
Just, yeah.
We're still in the winter time.
Yeah,
I can't forget.
Yeah. It's still 2 buckets of water to get things rolling in the morning. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about the California state education budget. Fred Van Vleck was in last week. I think he said it was within the hour of it being released. So he really wasn't up to speed with it 100%. So we'll take the opportunity, since Gary I know is up to speed because he's had 2 full business days to come up to speed, to get to know this thing. And actually, there are some good things in here. There's some challenges, and that's okay. That's part of the game anymore. So we'll talk about some of the exciting things and some of the challenging things about the upcoming budget when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from T.S. Eliot. You a fan?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Humankind cannot bear very much reality.
And we're going to talk about the governor's budget?
Yeah.
Okay.
You appreciate the double entendre there.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Yeah. So when you saw last Thursday when the budget rolled out, or flopped out, depending on how you want to look at it.
Well, the budget just for education is 120 pages long. It took a little bit of reading.
Okay. It landed with a
thud. Yes.
Thud.
Yes, it did.
When that came out, were you, general first blow through this thing on a 10-point scale? How'd it come in?
7 in terms of not too many surprises. The governor has proposed, once again, a weighted student formula. In other words, a different way of funding schools. In concert with the pledges made around Prop 30, when that passed in November, he said that would lead to additional stabilization for the schools. His proposal came out and did just that. There's modest increases. He's looking at additional revenues to the state brought in not only by Prop 30 and the new taxes, but also because of the slightly improving economy in the state. He's applying that.
It's not balanced on the back of that, though, is it?
No. It's using a blend of those two things. Okay. And I think it's strategic in the sense that he is paying down some of the debt obligations that the state has toward education, plus providing a very modest COLA. Overall, the budget itself is balanced in the sense of living within government's projected means. And even the LAO, the Ledge Analyst Office, came out with a release just a couple of hours ago. And their analysis of the budget was reasonably positive, too, in terms of they think the governor is taking a moderate approach to projecting revenues as we look at the challenges ahead, and that the overall expense budget is within a reasonable band. Now, having said that, they didn't agree with every aspect, and we don't either. And of course, our response on our end is, can we take this new way of doing business, and will it ensure educational equity for small and rural school districts? In some cases, it's a plus.
While still giving a desirable outcome.
Yes. But in other cases, it would not deliver as promised. And it would threaten some of the opportunities that we provide kids now. So we're going to be taking what the governor has rolled out, and I can explain a little bit more in detail. It appears convoluted, even though it's attempting to be simple. And then we're going to modify it with some local perspectives on, shall I say, on the ground perspective. I can tell you this. When he rolled out his new ways of doing business last year, it didn't get a lot of traction. Number one, there wasn't any new money. And shifting the money that was on the table at the time, there would have definitely created winners and losers. Because there's new money into the system, he can pursue new strategies without taking money away from already cash-strapped districts. So that's his timing is better, is what I'm saying this year.
New money into the system, is this similar to what we're seeing discussed at the federal level? Where we can argue whether or not there should be any additional monies put in, or is this... when you said living within the means,
yeah,
I see a $16 to $18 to $20 billion initially, but you can project it out. I've seen as high as $130 billion statewide with some of the unfunded stuff that's out there, like the retirement plans and things of that nature. Well, okay, living within means tells me that that's going to get bought down pretty darn quick, rather than if there is any bump, spending it and establishing new benchmarks. When you said COLA, it was like red flag, ding, ding, ding,
well,
flares.
The COLA on this is very modest. It's 1.65%. And he applies that. He says, you know, there is a cost of doing business that is going up, but it's a very modest one. He's taking another couple billion dollars and buying down the debt that's owed, that wall of debt that he keeps talking about. And his strategy is long term. One of the most intriguing aspects of Governor Brown's budget, and he's totally breaking away with tradition, is he's trying to get the state steered in a different direction and looking at it long term. He anticipates that it will take until 2016-17 before the debt is entirely paid off that he has within the education realm.
So that's those IOUs you guys have been receiving for the last
years. Those IOUs, he wants to pay them off. But he recognizes he can't do it all at one time. He can't overproject. It's got to take a while. And then his targeted way of doing business, the new formula for distribution that he's trying to shoot for, he thinks cannot be fully implemented until 2021. Now, you think about it. How many politicians have ever carefully looked that far ahead and tried to plan accordingly? I pat him on the back.
Probably those that are never reelected.
Well, I'll tell you, that is the greatest risk, because if he gets us moving down another pathway, Brian, other people have to be committed to follow along in future years.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Nowadays, it's cold outside, especially if you can't afford warm winter coats for your children. That's where Coats for the Cold comes in. This homegrown organization collects donated coats, cleans them, and distributes them to needy people. It began in 2008 when Robert Lone saw sharply reduced coat prices in a store, bought a batch, and donated them to the Eureka Rescue Mission. Beginning late in January, Coats for the Cold will give out over 1,000 coats in the county, now including southern communities. To donate a coat, new or lightly used, there are 50 Humboldt locations where you can drop it off this month. Find them on this website, coatsforthecold.org. That's coatsforthecold.org. Volunteers from Teen Challenge and other organizations will give out the coats to children. Your warm heart can keep them warm this winter. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, the rollout of a budget like this that goes from categorical, tight, hold your breath, to one where much more autonomy, much more ability to become creative, to take advantage of efficiencies and, you know, buying and things of that nature. Could it be a situation of be careful of what you ask for? You might just get it.
Well, I think that will be in some cases, certainly, Brian. And I think that's one of the reasons why over the years, certain constituent groups have said, no, protect our money and keep it restricted so we know that money is going for certain places. But here's a couple of concepts that I think is spot on. The governor is saying, look, we have locally elected school boards who go out and hire their people and provide schools in their local communities. They ought to be the ones accountable to their electorate for delivering. What we want to do is give them the flexibility to do that. Now, having said that, he recognizes that there are some populations of students that do require more investments historically. Disadvantaged students who are from poor families and those who are non-native English speakers. Research shows without a doubt that those two populations, because they're disadvantaged, when they come in the door, they require more additional resources. But there's a couple of other things in the process that we need to remind the governor, and that is, in your rural area, it costs more to deliver services than it does in an urban area when you don't have these economies of scale.
And competition.
And competition, absolutely. That is plus part of it, too. The other thing is things like transportation. A couple of years ago, we had the debacle where they were going to take away transportation altogether, which would just have totally upended rural school programs. He heard that message. And so what he is saying is, I'm going to continue to award transportation dollars, and I will do it as an add-on to those districts that currently get it. Now, the downside about that is he's fixing it at a particular amount, and he's not subjecting that to ongoing cost of living adjustments. Well, when you have transportation program, there's not a school district in this state that gets transportation money who already isn't spending general fund money to complement their transportation fund in order to keep those yellow buses rolling, because it's been a fixed pot of money for a long time. But you've got to give reasonable cost of living on those things. Gas goes up, diesel goes up.
So the fuel costs are still based on 10, 15 years ago?
Oh, if not further away than that. I can't remember the base year, but it was a very long time ago when they did the original study. Now, the Ledge Analyst Office came out today and said, gee, those formulas are out of date. They need to be updated. And he shouldn't hold them out from the pot. Well, the LAO is wrong. It is out of date. They need to be updated. The amount of money going toward transportation needs to be enhanced. But you don't blend it in with the pot, because not every district has transportation needs.
Certainly Humboldt County has got, and Del Norte County too, I would imagine, a significantly higher percentage of dollars going towards public transportation for the kids than you have in some of the smaller schools.
I think that's probably true. Well, look at the physical size. If you're Northern Humboldt High School District, you're busing kids from Blue Lake, from Oric, Arcata. Right,
but you only got one bus, or maybe two or three buses, versus the Santa Rosa School District that might have a lot smaller drive, but maybe they've got a fleet three times the size.
Or not driving at all. Because there are many districts down there that don't even operate transportation programs that are all within a mile or two of the homes they serve. So it really depends on
the
geography.
That'd be a different dynamic, wouldn't it?
Yeah. We have one district actually in Humboldt County that doesn't have a transportation program, and only one, that's Rio Dell, because they have such a tight-knit community that they serve. But Scotia, right next door to them, they operate a bus system. So it just depends on the geographic boundaries that you have.
You mentioned ESL, and what was the other?
Low income.
Okay.
So children who are from families on free and reduced price meal program, that would be the count.
So what about the kids with the medical?
Special ed?
Yeah.
Special ed is outside the new formula system that is continued to be a categorical.
So that just wasn't part of any adjustments?
No, he didn't. He swept up, or his proposal is to sweep up about 40 categorical programs and throw them in one big pot and then redistribute them differently to places. I can tell you one of the economic shifts, and this will be interesting to see how this plays out. Some of the wealthier communities that under today's distribution get a lot of money would not get a lot of money over time. Their monies would be shifted. It would be the poorer communities, the poorer schools that would actually get more resources over time if you adhere to what the governor wants to do. And that's for two reasons. One is the types of kids they're serving have greater need, and the communities don't have the wherewithal to generate to meet that need locally, resources. But he's also saying that to the Beverly Hills of the world and some of the districts, say Marin and those kinds of things, that look, you've been receiving more than your fair share in the past, and you're not going to be receiving as much state support because you have the ability to have more local support than what another community might have. And I think that's true.
So kind of sounds like a little bit of a economic caste.
He's trying to equalize
battle going
and
on.
Make
so what do you do in a more big, in a larger district where you've got schools that schools that can tell time a little bit better than what I could? I'll just tease to the break. KINS, News and Information Time. What about? We'll find out when we come back.
Santa's been to Palco Pharmacy with a full bag overflowing with great ideas. For Christmas season entertaining, you'll find seasonal dishes and glassware for a wonderful festive event. There are some dancing mice and fun figurines that seem to have captured the essence of Christmas joy and fun. And don't forget those very special Christmas cards for loved ones and family members. Those are also available for you. Santa's been there, and now it's your turn to go to Palco Pharmacy in the Scotia Shopping Center, your center for pharmacy and gift ideas this Christmas.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Gary Eagles. Gary, with the state education budget that was rolled out last week, as you're looking at this, the question I was trying to formulate before we ran out of time in the last segment was, what about those districts that have got the overachiever school in the mix? Jacoby Creek would be an easy one, but they're on their own, so that doesn't really work. But let's say you have school district Eagles.
They're all high achieving. Yeah. I'm sorry, Brian.
And you have the Gary school that's kicking butt, and then you got the Brian school that's dragging butt.
Okay. So what do you do?
Well, and I'm looking at it and thinking, okay, if it all gets blended in, School Brian is probably going to get a little bit more than School Gary.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, now, wait a minute, one of the biggest challenges we've had over the decades are the kid that gets it getting so bored because he's having or she's having in the classroom almost remedial instruction going on while they're looking to take accelerated in that classroom. Mm-hmm. They get bored, they start to get squirrely, things fall apart, maybe they tune out of education, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, while trying to bring up somebody who may or may not be inclined.
How do you balance
between the schools, let alone in the classrooms?
Well, I think you've got two things going on. First of all, you're talking about resources, and any given district is going to be given a total pot of money based on the mix of kids that they have. The higher concentration of disadvantaged kids that they have, the more resources they'll be given. But what's nice about the governor's strategy is that they leave it up to the schools to deploy those resources. Now, that's not to say they're going to take the money from the neediest schools and give it all to the ones that are doing well because they want to serve the gifted population. But what it does mean is it's not going to be formula driven from the state, tell them exactly where they can spend it, where they can't. It's going to be driven on outcomes and whether kids are, as the governor says, career and college ready. Now, even if you're talking about a high-performing school, you may be talking about a high percentage of kids going on to college. So we're going to be looking at student outcomes. So in terms of instructionally, you're going to be supporting differentiated instruction for kids, more technology. In fact, the governor's budget encourages online learning alternatives to help accelerate learning for some kids and fill in the gaps for others where the curriculum is not as rich, but they need online learning to supplement. So the governor's thinking about out of the box, how education is going to be delivered in the future to meet those individual needs.
So how does... or how is their accountability or flexibility, let's say, for schools that do a very good job in getting kids into the military, getting kids into vocational schools, not necessarily the four-year institution, not maybe even necessarily publicly funded institutions.
Right, vocational schools.
But they are moving on to other things, and certainly by anybody's standard, they would be successful. Well, is there an allowance or a factor or recognition?
There will be if, again, if some of the new accountability measures that people have talked about get in place, which I think they will, because they're trying to talk about what's the definition of success and what to hold schools accountable for, because there's still an accountability process here. But it's not going to be how well you can write a plan. It's going to be how well you can deliver on a school-based. So it isn't just testing. It's how many kids get accepted for college, how many kids complete the A to G requirements, how many kids get accepted into post-secondary education. There's how many kids take career tech education classes in preparation. So there's going to be, or at least there's expected to be, a number of benchmarks that schools will be held accountable and will still have to report on. The nice part about it, the reason the governor's proposal is so attractive, at least at the get-go, and I think it's got some great merit as it, if we can flesh it out correctly on the long term, is that it gets rid of bureaucracy, or it significantly reduces it down from its present paperwork.
Reduces it, or reduces the stuff that they do?
No, I think it actually does both. It definitely gets rid of the unnecessary paperwork requirements and reporting requirements that are as part of every categorical today. I can tell you it's just simply ridiculous what is asked for. Because accountability is measured by how many pieces of paper you can submit, not by what you actually do. And what we need to do is free up people that are right now worried about writing reports and actually get in there and work with kids and do something. And that is the positive aspect about getting rid of categorical programs. Now, the proof will be in the pudding. And here's goes back to an earlier question you had about risk. If you get rid of all, or if you get rid of most of the shackles off of local school boards, will they deliver? And we don't know. But I can tell you if they have a good, accurate accountability system that's really looking at student outcomes. In other words, we look at outputs, not inputs. That's what the current process does. It just requires a lot of inputs. And we're just looking at services to kids and are the kids being successful, then over time, school boards, school administrations, school staffs will make the decisions that are appropriate. We will close the achievement gap. We will get more kids going on to post-secondary education, I'm confident.
I'm sure there's a significant concern with these budgets being as they are with some of the discussions. What percentage of this is going to go into labor costs versus what percentage of this is going to go into the classroom? Is there any delineation, any distinction from what the governor is talking about? Or is this a pot full of money? So if a school district has, let's say, an aggressive union or one that has been very passive and been willing not to accept increases, now here comes this funding. Can these dollars be applied towards labor costs?
Well, they can be. I can tell you that...
The scenarios, how they can play out.
It could be all over the map because during the last 5 years of extreme pressures on school budgets, each district has taken its own pathway to achieve a balanced budget. Some have frozen salary schedules, some have limited health benefits, some have even rolled back salaries. So what an individual district does with this money will, of course, play out with that. What I do believe needs to be addressed, and that is labor related, but it's also related to students, is the waiver going down and allowing districts to shorten the school year down to 175 days. The governor did not address that in his budget. And personally, if he wants to achieve equity, not only must he come up with a vision about the financing as he has laid out, he also has to eliminate that waiver over time of the reduced school year. We've got to get back up to 180 days for all kids, regardless of the district. And what you do on that is you establish a deadline and say, okay, if the deferrals and all of what's owed will be off book by 2016-17, then by June 30, 2017, that's the last day you can have a shorter year. After that, it's back up to 180. And then you allow local districts to figure out how they get that back on the books.
KINS, News and Information Times, 344. We'll be back with more from Gary Eagles.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 347. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, as you're looking at the budget, the implementation of it, some of the switch-o-change-os that we've talked about in the past, the IOUs, things of that nature, certainly you can't go in with to this thing with your eyes not looking both directions and monitoring some of these things. So you got the budget. When are some of those IOUs supposed to start getting paid back?
They will start next year. There are two kinds of things. We've got not only the amount of deficited, those are the true IOUs, but we also have those deferrals. Remember how the state was creative about its cash flow problems by delaying payment and not paying things on time? The deferrals, year-over-year deferrals, were totaling about $10 billion. He wrote down part of that this past year, $2.8 billion. He wants to write down.
Which means you paid off some of those?
He paid off 2.8 of the 10.
In other words, I write it down. I take the eraser out, yeah. And I write it down.
now he's adding $2.2 billion more. So he will have made current about $4 billion if this plan were to go through. He still owes about 5.6. So that's another reason why the long term. So paying money on time is one of the elements. Paying the deficit off and making that whole, that won't occur until 2021, which is what he said. The inter-year deferrals are to be paid off by 2016-17.
So he's catching up on a lot of stuff.
Yes, and his strategy is to pay a little bit off every year until he gets it paid off in a balanced way.
So what's the first roadside marker for you on this one, that it's going as anticipated?
By the end of this month, they are supposed to have a district-by-district analysis of exactly what the first year would look like rolling out.
District-by-district?
Yes.
You've got 100, right?
There are 985 or so in the state of California, plus a couple hundred charters. So he's got a lot of data to crunch. Yes. We'll see. And that'll be the first blush if how we interpret what he has said in the narrative plays out with the Department of Finance in the dollars and cents. That'll be my first benchmark. So by the time I come back next month, I'll tell you if it's on track.
So you're going to determine how close he really is to accurate and give him that feedback.
Yeah. That's where we'll start.
Yeah. That line about the inmates running the asylum?
Yeah, good point.
I'm kind of right there right now.
Well, I'll let you know how close it came.
Oh, well, it will be interesting to see if the numbers do add up and if there's special interest groups that then start to weigh in on this thing and chew it apart.
That's when you'll start seeing it.
Yeah. But so your first benchmark is 2.5 weeks from now.
Yes.
Very cool. Well, we'll find out in February then.
Yes, you will.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me again.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day, hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.